A Shared Curiosity, a podcast and community for parents and educators. Hear from pioneering educators who are taking risks and shaping the future of education. Tēnā koe, ko Kate toku ingoa, and welcome to A Shared Curiosity. I'm really excited to introduce to you Todd Rigg Carrero. He's well experienced in Montessori education. He's currently super passionate about working with teenagers. And I thought we were just going to be talking about Montessori, but he touches on so many things from relationships, parenting, the importance of independence, challenging, making mistakes, learning from failure. So I really hope that you enjoy today.
Current curiosity, if you will, for me is taking over the world. Just saying. I've recently come to realize that our kids deserve better. And it sounds weird to say that I just came to realize this, like I've known this for a long time, but in hearing all of the stories and listening to parents and, you know, examining schools and school systems and just the rampant level of, oh my goodness, what are we doing, is just, I guess, gotten to the point in me that it's time for a change. And I guess I'm currently, the curiosity group I'm interested in is the adolescents. Mm-hmm. I feel as if the adolescents are the most strangled group in the whole education system. When you mention to adults, especially if they are parents, the words teenagers or middle school or any of that, their immediate reaction tells you everything you need to know about how society feels about them. Mm. And in my opinion, the adolescents are the most brilliant human beings currently on the planet. Brain development wise, they are second only to the 0 to 3 year olds. As far as what's going on in the brain, as far as neural pathways being developed and reshaped and reformed and such. So in my view, that's what I'm calling intelligence, is the ability to adapt. So second most brilliant people on the planet, except for 0 to 3 year olds. But 0 to 3 year olds have, you know, issues. Mm. They're mostly napping, pooping, and eating. So they're really hard to take over the world with as a set of humans. So I figured, well, the adolescents are probably the ones to go with. Mm. And the adolescents are the ones that are most maligned. So they are the ones who need the most support. Mm. Like, everyone's all about the primary kids, and, oh, they're such fantastic people, da, da, da. And then they get to this, you know, 12 to 15, especially the 12 to 15 group, mm-hmm. like really narrowing it down to a 3-year window. Like 15 to 18, people are like, oh, yeah, they're high school, you know, they're about to be somebody someday, you know. But the 12 to 15s is this amorphous blob of humanity that no one knows what to do with. And unfortunately, what we're doing to them is making them feel really bad about themselves. I mean, Google images of teenager, and what you see, 95% of which is a child arguing with adult, mm-hmm. whether it's teacher, parent, whatever. And, you know, these kids are not stupid. Mm. In fact, they're quite intelligent. In fact, the second most intelligent on the planet. So they've totally sorted it out that no one likes them. Mm. And, you know, you wonder why in the mental health circles that they are the highest rising demographic of mental health issues. Yeah. That needs to stop. Just flat out, it needs to stop. Mm-hmm. Because if we are doing that much damage to that group of people, how are we going to solve world problems again? Mm-hmm. Remind me how that's going to work. Let's continue to break humans as they grow and develop. Mm-hmm. And then just hope that stuff will sort itself out. That's not how it's going to go. Mm. So that's why I'm here.
Do you think teenagers are aware?
Oh, yeah.
Of that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look at every movie, every TV show, mm. talk to any parent, go to a restaurant. I mean, it's everywhere. It pervades society. Mm. Right? How many teenage movies have empowered kids And especially if they even have empowered kids, which actually is more common nowadays compared to, like, you know, movies and TV series of when I was growing up. They might have empowered kids, but yet their relationships with adults are still strangled. It's like, how many movies or TV shows with teenagers as the main characters have decent relationships with adults? So it just perpetuates the same cycle over and over and over again that, oh, this is the way I'm supposed to act with adults.
So is it that you want to work with teenagers, or is it that you want to work with adults and change their perception of teenagers?
Yes. Both. Both sides need help, right? The student side, they need to know it's not their fault, right? And that's ultimately what's inside that's breaking them, is that they think it's their fault. Because, well, the adults tell them it's their fault with all of the media that influences that. And then working with the adults, they need to know, stop it. Just stop. Because you cannot control their lives. They are not mini adults. They don't have the same capacities and capabilities that you do. So stop expecting them to be. And do a little bit of actual scientific research and understand the neural pathway development during the 12 to 15 year old period. And you'd start to really see what's going on with them is a train wreck in their head. But to expect them to achieve some form of perfection is ridiculous. Not only are they biologically incapable of it, but then society puts all of this expectation and pressure, you know, from going from primary school to secondary school, right? There's this fundamental shift in how we think about them as being, okay, well, you're nearing adulthood, so you're going to be on this. You're going to do this homework and, you know. It's like, no, this is the worst window for them to be sorting that kind of stuff out. That's not what they need 12 to 15 in any way, shape, or form.
Have you looked quite far back in the history? I'm just thinking, you know, in teenage years, in, like, you know, 100 or so years ago, they were having children, they were, you know...
Yeah, so exactly, they were having children, and even if you go back 100 years, right, kids this age, especially, you know, maybe around the 13, 14, 15, they went out and got jobs, right? Like, they started being contributing members of society, and... that would be a brilliant thing to do. I mean, even I, when I was a kid, had a paper route, for goodness sakes, right? I mean, just going out and contributing and doing something, right? But to sit in a box, listening to someone drone on all day about God knows what, is such a waste of their time. 12 to 15, in my opinion, 12 to 15s should barely be in school at all. So... but yes, if you look at the history of, you know, what did that age group of people do, it was not just sit in a room and listen to lectures and be assumed to be gaining some knowledge of something. It's not who they are. It's so not who they are.
Is it what anyone is?
It is. But there's certain windows, there's certain sensitive periods for it, and sensitive periods for different things. So, for example, like a 0 to 3 year old, they have sensitive periods for language acquisition, right? They have sensitive periods for developing the senses, right? The 6 to 9 year old, they're sensitive to understanding how everything works, which is why they're constantly asking, why, right? Like, there's all of these... not anecdotal, but there's all of these, what do you call them, phrases that we say about kids of, you know, the terrible twos and this, that, the other, right?
Yeah,
there's a reason why these phrases exist, you know, and that the 6 to 9, they literally want to know everything. And, you know, with part of my Montessori background, the curriculum, if you will, for the 6 to 9s and 9 to 12s, is the entire universe. That's the curriculum. It's the whole universe. Because that is the sensitive period of time when they want to know how everything works.
Yeah.
They want to know where it all came from, because they're trying to sort out, how do I fit into this grand scheme of all of what I see around me? So that's the sensitive period, right? And then you get to the 12 to 15 and the 15 to 18, they have different sensitive periods. 12 to 15 is social, right? they are now pushing away from mom and dad, and biologically they have to, because as you just said a minute ago, they're becoming a different person, and psychology follows biology. So if you look at a 12 to 15 year old, biologically they are now gaining the ability to reproduce, which I know, you know, scares the bejesus out of most adults, especially parents. But if you think of it this way, right, they are gaining the ability to act and create something new. Mm-hmm. That's what that is, that biological imperative to propagate the species, right? It is the creation of something new. Mm-hmm. So if that's what's happening biologically, that's what's happening psychologically. Mm-hmm. They are burgeoning with ideas of creating something new. Mm-hmm. And that's when they're starting to get an idea of, hey, this world doesn't work. You know, and they start getting really challenged with, you know, climate change and like big, big hitting topics. And they want to do something about it. But society says, no, go sit back in the box and listen to your teacher. That's ridiculous. They should be out on the streets, knocking on doors, having drives, saving whales, cleaning up pollution. Like, they would nail it.
Yeah.
But society expects them to just fall in line. So 12 to 15 is about obedience.
Yeah.
Society thinks. And it's so not that.
It's like the pinnacle of conformity, really, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it exactly. It's the tip. Like, everyone's willing to give a lot of latitude to primary students for, you know, for whatever. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they hit secondary, it's like, oh, no, no. Now I expect you to be, you know, a human being. It's like, well, yeah, I was a human being a minute ago. And actually loving life. But now you're telling me I've got to be this other thing, which doesn't match me psychologically or biologically. So I'm really frustrated. And hence the mental health issues we have. It's just ridiculous.
So you want to change the world, and particularly the 12, 15-year-olds. Mm-hmm. What are you doing about it?
So Montessori was my venture into that. So my first Montessori experience was teaching at a school in the United States as the science teacher. Mm-hmm. And this was a school that had been on the ground for 40 years. It's the school that my daughter chose when she was going into second grade. Mm-hmm. For you Kiwis, second grade is, what, 7 years old, I think? Yep. Something around there.
Yeah.
So she chose the school, and she loved it. Mm-hmm. And she loved going to school, and she loved learning and all of that. And previous, in first grade, she was starting to develop nervous tics and anxiety problems and hating school. And this is a seven-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I immediately said, no, this is a problem. That what is going on at school such that this has become a place she doesn't want to go, mm-hmm. right? And it was the fact that, the teacher, and we had put her into a Spanish immersion school, mm-hmm. right? So her kindy, the teacher was awesome. She loved it. She learned more Spanish in the first 5 months than I've known in my entire life. And she just ate it up. Got into first grade, and that teacher had totally succumbed to the testing regime of the U.S., and so there was literally tests every week, and then there was unit tests every week, mm-hmm. and standardized tests, and it just was annoying, mm-hmm. you know. And my daughter, turns out she has hyperhearing, right? Which, how would you notice that if you were a teacher, right? Mm-hmm. So every time there was a test where it had to be quiet, it's got to be quiet in here for the test, no one make a noise. She heard everything. So the kid across the room tapping the pencil on the desk while he or she is thinking threw her off. Mm-hmm. And it just became this source of anxiety and stress that, oh, I don't know where I am on my test anymore, and I've got to go back, and it's important. This test is important for some reason. Mm-hmm. When, you know, where the data of those standardized tests went is nowhere.
And she's six at this stage?
And she's like 6, 7 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, okay, nope, done with this. And so I had launched myself into a self-study of education, and I read heaps of books. Mm-hmm. all kinds of different books. Diane Ravitch, Ken Robinson, just heaps of people. And I started to devise my own school system. Mm-hmm. Like I saw the big 30,000 foot picture of how to support kids on their journey, right? And I was starting to piece it together and getting ideas of, oh, it should look like this. And I even, you know, started dreaming up names for a school, you know, with different components to it. And there would be the Thinkerton Village where, I mean, just all kinds of, cool. Okay, I'm designing a thing, right? Yeah. And then I read Montessori's book. And said, damn it, she already got there to me. Right? She already got there before me. So, and then I realized that this was 100 years ago. Mm. And that's when I became mad. Right? It's like, wait, hold on. Someone already got this and nailed it 100 years ago. And what have we been doing since? Wrecking it. Totally wrecking it. Mm-hmm. So then I launched myself into, well, what happened to this? Like, where... why didn't this catch on like, you know, wildfire? And, mm-hmm. you know, discovered all of the stuff that she went through during the world wars and all of that stuff. And it's unfortunate that it went that way. But it's time to put it back together. Because mm-hmm. the thing is, like, something that we talked about prior, you know, would I start education all over again? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In a heartbeat. If I had magical powers and could wave my wand, it would have been done yesterday. Mm-hmm. Because the system of schooling has become just that. Mm. It's not about the kids. It's about the system. It's about this school looks good. Mm. We gotta be a brand name. Why? So you can raise the housing market in your area? I mean, that's all that happens. Right? It's not like kids coming out of a quote-unquote top-tier school are necessarily any better or worse than kids coming out of a non-top-tier school. Mm. Kids are coming out of schools with pretty much the same abilities and capabilities that they always have. But the biggest difference that we've got going on is how many are coming out with mental health problems. Mm. So something has shifted. And it's just time to correct it. And I now realize I have no idea what your original question was.
Neither can I.
And I migrated away from that terribly, I think.
It was, how are you? How is you want this change? How are you making? What are you changing?
Ah, yeah. What am I changing? Right. So that's right. I launched into my background a little bit. Yes, that's right. So I then... I had been teaching at university during that window of my Ava's issue mm-hmm. and my daughter's issue. And
were you teaching at university?
Astronomy.
Astronomy, okay.
Yeah. And so when she joined the school, I was actually a little bit dissatisfied with my university teaching mm-hmm. and was looking for something else. And her school was looking for a science teacher. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah. And that was a Montessori. Mm-hmm. So that was my first, you know, in the trenches version of, okay, what can Montessori possibly look like, right? After discovering, like, oh, no, this is the way to do it. Mm. Well, I got about 6 months into that job and realized that their middle school that I was teaching in had succumbed to parental pressure and society pressure and was essentially a high school prep. Mm-hmm. So even though it had Montessori on the door and the teachers spoke the speak, mm-hmm. what actually happened in the classroom day after day after day was not my concept of what Montessori should be. Mm-hmm. The children were not given enough ownership of their lives in school. So a year and a half more of that, of fighting the fight with not just my fellow teachers, some of which joined my banner, quote unquote, and we started to raise a bit of a ruckus, mm-hmm. But also with the head of school. No, this is your program. It's great. It's been around a long time, but it is so not Montessori. I don't know why you have the name on the door. Mm-hmm. You can imagine that conversation didn't go well, which is fine because I was kind of fed up
yeah.
with the, it was kind of like you just destroyed my hopes. Like, I was like, I totally, the Montessori thing, man, I'm all over it. I love it. Yeah, yeah. And then, no, you're giving me garbage. What is this? Right. Mm-hmm. So I was okay to leave that, but of course, you know, where to go next? And that's what brought us here to New Zealand, actually. It's not that I was targeting, like, New Zealand's education system or anything like that, but wife and I had honeymooned here years ago, had always thought about moving back. I threw my resume at a couple of places here and got bites, and bada boom, here I am. Mm-hmm. And that was teaching Montessori primary school. Mm-hmm. So 6 to 12 year olds, right? And that flavor of Montessori was what I was looking for, right? And it gave so much autonomy to the kids, gave them so much more ownership. But there was this window of time that I onboarded. I onboarded as a result of a teacher going out for training. But the school more than doubled mm-hmm. in that time frame, which really derailed, in my opinion, not the growth, but the somewhat of the program, because there was a constant stream of new kids. Mm-hmm. And the thing about a classroom, no matter what classroom, state or otherwise, you know, there has to be a normalization period, mm-hmm. right? People have to settle in, get the routine, mm-hmm. this, that, the other. And if you have a constant stream of new kids coming in, it was just constantly in flux. And yeah. the kids showed it. I mean, some of them, especially more on the 9 to 12 side, were just all over the map. Mm-hmm. And very hard to wrangle and very hard to get to focus. And many of them in that 9 to 12 window were not Montessori prior. So they were coming from state school
and they had baggage
with so much pressure and baggage that they came to Montessori, and it was like, oh, it was just, you know, free range kids. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, no, there's still a responsibility here for your education. It's just, mm-hmm. it's on you now instead of on me. Mm-hmm. And it took them, some of them, it took upwards of a year to sort that out.
Yeah.
Right. So the school is now running very well. They've got up to, you know, the cap of students that they're, and so things have normalized, but it was that window that I just happened to be there where things were just a bit chaotic.
Mm. And this is Meraki?
Yeah, this is Meraki down the road. Fantastic school, but it just didn't fit me in that moment. Mm. I was looking for stability. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that the growth was going to be so dramatic in that time frame. So, anyhow. And I'd been teaching already for 16 years. So I was kind of done with teaching anyway. Mm-hmm. And it showed. Mm-hmm. So when my contract was done, I exited and then, you know, found Crimson Education, mm-hmm. Where they are trying to build this program targeting middle school students. Mm-hmm. So the 11 to 14 year old, which is roughly the 12 to 15, and empowering them to discover their passions, strive for more than what they're getting, and eventually, if they are keen, you know, to head towards top-tier universities. Okay, so for me, I joined on with that drive of, yeah, middle school students, helping them sort their lives out, yep, I'm in, mm-hmm. right? And it's got a global reach. So I'm talking to kids literally from all over the world. I've got 4 in South Africa. I've got 5 in Kazakhstan. There's 1 in Great Britain. I mean, just, you know, plenty in here in New Zealand, but also China, Taiwan, Singapore, you know, the UAE. It's all over the place, right? And all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, man, I get to talk to kids all over the world. And it's partly research for me. Like, as I talk to them, I'm finding out, like, what's going on in their world. What? It's the same thing.
Throughout the world.
It's the same thing throughout the world. Mm. Which was totally my suspicion. Mm. Right? I mean, education systems of the non-quote-unquote alternative variety, although I don't like the word alternative, but that's what mainstream knows it as, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same, right? There's just been this high degree pressure of success and succeeding. Mm. And which is nonsense. Mm. It, to me, it's total nonsense. So they're all under the same pressures and stress. Mm-hmm. And mental health issues are showing through. Mm. So a lot of my conversations with them are almost counseling sessions, you know, to be another adult that they can outlet to.
Sure.
Because 12 to 15s, let's face it, are not going to outlet to mom and dad. Mm. Nor should they. they need to become their own person and they need to sort out their own lives, and outputting to mom and dad to solve things for them is the worst option.
Do you enjoy this role?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I'm now slowly twisting from the inside Crimson's goal, if I can.
Yeah.
Granted, I've only been there since February, but man, no time like the present. Get it done now. So yeah, you know, taking over the world, both, you know, as said earlier, on the parent side and on the student side, to get this window of time sorted so that we can actually do things that are important. Because otherwise it's not going to happen.
So if you go into this miraculous world where everyone forgets about school and you have to rewrite it, write it, particularly for what you're passionate about at 12 to 15, what would it look like?
So interestingly enough, Montessori, you know, she wasn't an educator at all, in fact. She was a physician. And that's the beauty of her system, I think, compared to other systems. In fact, I don't even want to call hers a system. It's a philosophy, honestly. But she didn't speak much on the secondary program before she passed. I mean, she had total intention on doing so with her son, who totally got involved in the Montessori development and all that. But then she passed, and so she didn't actually put out much. The challenge with that is twofold. First of all, there's very few secondary programs in Montessori around the world at all. Mm-hmm. They just rarely exist. The upshot of that is that no one really knows how to do it. Mm-hmm. People, it's so funny, humans are weird. People look at what she did write about the secondary group, and some swear on it like the Bible. Mm-hmm. Like, no, this is what she said. This is exactly what we're going to do. And then some are, well, no, the intent of what she said, and they go this other way. Mm-hmm. And it's so funny to me because, you know, here is a person that, you know, can be verified as having existed, who wrote some stuff, mm-hmm. and then the people who follow up, you know, take on their own interpretation and run with it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much how everything goes. Mm-hmm. But in some domains, it ends up becoming a fight. Mm. And it's starting to in the Montessori world. And so if I had my druthers, I would get those groups together and say, no. Look, we need to sort this out before it becomes a, you know, we do it this way and we do it that way kind of a thing. It's like, no. It shouldn't be, it has to be done anyway. Mm. So to your question, you know, how would I redo a secondary program for this age group? It would be with the Montessori philosophy, but that each school site would look totally different. Because each school site, to me, has a different environment, like literally physical environment around them. Mm-hmm. It has a different structure to the building. Mm-hmm. It has different human beings in the classroom and the adults, the demographics.
Sure.
It has different psychologies and values coming from the parents. Mm-hmm. So every single site would be totally different. Mm-hmm. And the things that the kids did would be totally different. So I can't sit here and say that, you know, if I could wave a magic wand and redo a secondary program, it would look like A, B, C, D, E. To me, that starts to feel like I'm just now doing the same thing that the state system has been doing for a long time. Of I'm going to pre-prescribe what it's going to look like. No. There should be no pre-prescription. Mm-hmm. It should be developed by the kids. Those are the ones who matter. Mm-hmm. The adults, just be there to support them. That's your role. Mm-hmm. Right? Put a building around them so that they're not wet all day long. Give them outside space to go do whatever they want to do. And just be there to support them and let them run the show.
What do you say to parents who say that kids don't know what they don't know?
Nobody knows what they don't know. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous to say that kids in particular don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. How is that? How are they any different? So of course they don't know what they don't know. The role of the adult is to let them explore.
I mean, how else does an adult learn what they don't know? They don't know, mm-hmm. right? Is you explore. Now, granted, most adults do not do that, right? We get into our world of work that we've, you know, designed or whatever that we went to school for, although rarely in most cases. Mm-hmm. But we don't explore, mm-hmm. right? We don't seek out other things beyond our own four walls, right? So we kind of, adults tend to create their own four walls and live in it. And this is why they have the expectation of doing that to the kids, because they think that that's what life is. No, that's not what life is. Actually, follow the kids. The kids know what life is, which is do what you want when you want and be responsible for what you've done. And adults don't know how to do that, right? Because we think that we've heaped all of this responsibility onto ourselves. Oh, I'm responsible for this money. I'm responsible for that. I'm responsible for dinner. Da, 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 da. No, you're not. Why are you the king of your domain or the queen of your domain? Mm-hmm. Like, who set that up? You did. And it's ridiculous. You know, my 12-year-old, I'm just getting to the point where, okay, you're cooking dinner. Sort that out. And last night she did, right? And what she made pasta and she wasn't sure what to put in it. I said, well, there's this thing called a refrigerator. Look in there. Right? And she found something and put it in. And she overdid the pasta immensely because mm-hmm. she was, you know, buggered all doing something else, right? Didn't. But I'm not going to stop and say, hey, you know, your food is going off or whatever. Mm. That's not my job. She's making dinner.
So is it switching, you know, the role of the expert, like,
mm-hmm.
it's switching their role, eh?
Yes. Yeah. I've often said to parents who are struggling in that domain mm-hmm. of, you know, how to interact with their students, or not students, sorry, their children, mm-hmm. And I say, be stupid. Mm-hmm. 6 to 12 years old, you are the most brilliant human being in their world. 12 to 15, you now have to be dumb as bricks. Mm. And it's a shift. Like, it's not a shift on their part, it's a shift on your part, the adult's part, right? Because the 6 to 12-year-old wants to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
So show them, right? Show them. Like, if they want to know how sheep are born, go to a sheep farm. Mm. You know, take their passions and interests and run with it, right? When it becomes 12 to 15... stop doing anything for them. They're totally capable. And to think that they're not is only because you have not allowed them previous to do it. Mm. Right? So, not only do I say to those parents of, you now need to be stupid,
mm.
but I also say, drop the rope and let go.
Mm.
Just get out of their way. Parents are in their children's way. That's the biggest issue.
Mm.
Is we think that we've got it all sorted and that we're going to protect them. And No, we're not. Right? Keeping them alive and loving them for whatever they do is your job. End of story.
Mm.
That's it.
I'm wondering, curious to hear how you face that. Like, you know, you talk about empowering the kids, but mm-hmm. you almost need to empower the parents, eh?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, you mentioned this earlier, right? Yeah. It's like, what side do you go? It has to be both sides, yeah. right? The kid, because the kids have been so maligned now, they have to know that someone's got their back. Most of society does not. So they need to know and hear from the voices that are attempting to be that for them, right? Mm. Which, again, I don't like this word, but the alternative schooling system mm-hmm. is attempting to be, we've got your back. Right? We're here for you.
Mm-hmm.
But the parents and adults out there absolutely need to hear and need to be sometimes forcefully held back of stop doing that thing you're doing for your child. Think of it this way. Every time you do something for the child, you've now disallowed them their own discovery and understanding of it. So by all means, drive them to wherever. By all means, make them dinner.
Mm-hmm.
By all means, sort out their lunch in the morning. They won't know how to do any of these things when they grow up.
Mm-hmm.
And by the driving thing, right, I'm not saying let a 12 to 15-year-old take the car and go drive.
But it should be a negotiation. It shouldn't be this implicit assumption that I'm your chauffeur. Mm-hmm. Right? If you've got something you want to do, go to the mall or go horse riding lessons or whatever it is, you need to ask me and you need to find out if I'm available for that. Mm. Right? But we don't empower them to do it because we tend to sort those things out for them and then just implicitly handle it for them. And so, of course, why would they be independent?
Do you think that's what's at the heart of Montessori? Is it that independence?
Yeah. So, for example, I could give you heaps of examples at Meraki. Okay. At Meraki, they have a form. It's a going out form, mm-hmm. right? There's one for the 6 to 9s, one for the 9 to the 12s. Just a little bit more detail for the 9 to 12s. Mm-hmm. But essentially, the premise is the same. It's a RAMS form, as they call it here in New Zealand. Never heard of such a thing in the States, but fine. And so the kids are responsible for filling it out, not the teacher. If you want to go out to do something, we're totally down with that. But you've got to tell us where you're going, when you're going, who's taking you, when you're coming back, all of that. Mm-hmm. So they sit around with each other, sorting out what to put down in the sheet. And for those who can't quite read yet, you know, on the 6 to 9 side, we read them the question and then they respond and write their answer. Mm-hmm. Or for those who maybe can't quite get the letters and it's becoming frustration, okay, well, let me write that for you. Just, you know, you tell me. Mm-hmm. Support them through the entire process is what I'm saying, right? For the 9 to 12, you know, the expectation is, no, you know how to read and write by now. You go sort that out, bring it back. Mm-hmm. So once they've sorted that out, they can go wherever they want. As long as they've sorted it out. So there was heaps of trips to Snow Planet. There was trips down to the Auckland Library. And like my daughter organized a trip to the Auckland Library. Mm-hmm. Auckland Central Library because my wife had just gone to see this exhibit of really old books in the basement. Mm-hmm. Well, my daughter was keen at the time to go check that out. But she wanted to go with some students. And so she totally organized how to get there. But she did not want to be driven the entire way there. She wanted to be taken to the bus and to sort out the bus system to get there. Mm-hmm. Okay. She's 11 at this point. Mm-hmm. 11 and a half. Mm-hmm. Right? And so she filled out the form. She found out the bus timetable. She got someone to drive them to the bus station. The adult then who went with them had very clear and instructions of you do not interact with them mm-hmm. the entire day. Mm-hmm. You are not there to enjoy this event. It's not for you. Mm-hmm. You are there to make sure they don't die,
yeah.
Period. So you are to walk 5 feet behind them the entire time. It turns out it was my wife who got roped into driving to the bus station. And she said it was absolutely the hardest thing she has ever done is to be that adult and not step in when they've missed the bus stop. And they totally did. Mm-hmm. They missed the bus stop, went to the next one, got off because they recognized, uh-oh, this isn't where we're supposed to be, and then had to sort out how to get to the Auckland Central mm-hmm. Library mm-hmm. from a new bus stop that they hadn't sorted it out prior. And so on the ground, they had to figure it out. How much learning just happened in getting it wrong, right? So they sorted it out. They finally got to the library. They were only a few minutes late. They called in advance to the library person they were supposed to meet, tell them what was going on. Totally responsible. They got there. They did their thing. They saw the books. It was amazing. Getting back, another problem. They got to a bus stop to come back, and the bus never stopped there. Mm-hmm. No one saw the sign that this bus stop is not in operation. So they stood there, and they stood there, and buses went by, and buses went by. My wife is getting frustrated, but is holding her tongue. And eventually, she had to say one thing, and she said, there's other pieces of information in your environment other than your phone. Turns out that there was another man standing there. And so, oh, hey, do you know anything about this bus stop? That, oh, yeah, no, this one's not operational. The one you want's down the road. Oh! Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. There's human beings to connect with, mm-hmm. is what they just learned, right? Got to the bus stop, got on, came back. And it sorted itself out. And she wrote up a whole, my wife wrote up a whole experience of it. It got published in one of the Montessori journals. But it was just this, the amount of learning that happened in that exercise was way more than most kids get in an entire week. Right? And it was this dose of real learning, not this fictitious theoretical, you know, well, if you wanted to get from one place to another, what would you take? Oh, we'd take a bus. Oh, you're right. Gold star.
Yeah.
No, that's ridiculous. How about go?
Let's do it.
And figure it out, right? If you don't let them fail, they will never learn.
I think it comes back to that whole perfection thing, eh?
You know? We expect perfection, and yet there's not... Not only is there not a human being on the planet who's perfect... But from my astronomy and astrophysics background, there's nothing in the universe that's perfect. Like nothing, like black holes, planets, stars, there's no such thing as perfect anywhere in physical reality. So to expect it in psychological reality with kids or even ourselves as adults is the biggest sham we've given ourselves. And because of it, how many of us adults live our lives frustrated with ourselves and we beat ourselves up for it and this, that, the other? I would say almost everyone, right, at some point has done that. And some of them, you know, have sorted it out, right? The Gandhis, the Dalai Lamas, right, who've become enlightened and realized their bullshit for what it is. But that leaves about 7.6 billion other people who haven't sorted it out. So tell me how we're going to solve world problems if we all think we suck. We're not. So the true essence of what Montessori was after, and she says it in this way in numerous of her books, is the development of the new human being. And it's literally meant, no, we need an evolved new version of humanity, because if we keep psychologically doing this over and over and over again, nothing's ever going to get sorted, right? There's this phrase, right? Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Hogwash. We're doomed to repeat it, not because we haven't learned from history, but because we keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again, because we are not perfect. I just had this conversation with my daughter the other day about how there's this expectation of, I can't remember, I was reading something and it just struck me that I had to speak to her about it. It was this, you know, constantly leveling up of something, right? Constantly getting better at something. That's what it was. So, you know, you're learning your maths, and then you get better at it. And then, of course, you get better at it, and you get better at it. And I said, what's the end of that? Where does that end? There is no end. So if the trajectory of constantly getting better at something just because you've either put more work into it, more effort into it, more practice at it, there's no end to that, right? How is that achievable then? So we've set ourselves up with this fallacy that getting consistently better at something is actually possible. It's not. So we all live our lives in this hope that I, you know, if I just put in more effort, if I just did more practice, if I just did a little bit something, something, that I will improve linearly over time. Nonsense. So we stress ourselves out for nothing.
So kind of what you're saying is like presence, eh?
Yeah.
Like we're striving for something better, but we're lacking that presence.
And yeah, we're lacking the right now.
Yeah.
Right? It's all of this projection towards a future that, A, not only does the future not exist, but that particular future of constantly attaining a better mark or a better whatever, it's not even possible.
But not only do we do that, then we go and throw another word in there. Let's accelerate it.
Yeah, because doing it faster, better makes more sense. No, it's such a sham. It's such a sham. My daughter and I just finished the first movie of The Matrix.
because now is the window of time to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know what The Matrix is all about. Most people think it was just a very cool science fiction show, alternate reality, blah, 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 blah. Absolutely not. That's not what the movie's about. The movie is about the difference between the inner human being and the outer human being. Mm-hmm. We all have the inner human being. The inner human being is the one that is saying stuff to you all the time. And for you listeners out there, you just did it. You just said to yourself, what inner person? Mm-hmm. That person. That's the person I'm talking about. It's constantly talking. And it says things not only about your environment, about other people, but about yourself.
Yeah.
It will say absolutely anything to keep you protected. That can be a problem. And hence where Freud and, you know, other psychoanalysts come from, is that this inner person, who's the real person, finds it necessary to protect itself. If we were actually living our lives as that real human being on the outside, there would be no need for protection. But the problem is that we are always unsure, and this comes through childhood, that we may or may not be hurt. And we have a context, usually generated by moms and dads, when we're hurt, that was a bad thing. So if being hurt's a bad thing, then I better protect myself. Mm-hmm. Think about it, you know, a 0 to 3. They don't come pre-wired with this. They are real human beings. They emote at the drop of a hat. The problem is that their communication skills are just really weak. But they are the most real humans on the planet. Mm-hmm. After that, we start developing filters. We start developing a shield or armor or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. right? Of how to take information in and not let it hurt me. Okay. So if we're adding on layer upon layer of armor or shielding or filters and seeing the environment and the world around us in a different way than it really is, then how can we expect to live a life that is real? That's what The Matrix is about. The three sets of movies are all about this artificial environment called The Matrix, and it's something that we created. And eventually, the main character, Neo, becomes, quote-unquote, enlightened and destroys the whole thing. Mm. Now, he destroys it for everyone, but each person has to destroy this thing for themselves. Some of the conversations I have with the students I work with now is exactly that. Mm. Is, you know, I'll be talking to them. Mom and Dad are out of the room, and I can see on their face that they are angry with Mom and Dad for saying whatever, mm-hmm. just prior to getting on the call. So whatever it is I had to talk to them about, forget it. What's going on? And of course, they're not necessarily wanting to say because Mom and Dad are in earshot. Mm-hmm. So often I've said, go to some other room, put headphones on. Mm-hmm. Let's talk. And they'll, you know, tell me, oh, Mom just came down on me for X, Y, Z, whatever. Okay, so I can tell you're upset. Yeah, I'm really mad. What did you say to her? Oh, I just said that, yeah, fine, I'd do it. Why? Why did you say that? Mm-hmm. Right? The outside person gave a different response than what the inside person wanted. Mm-hmm. That's not being real. So I coached them through, well, if this is what you really wanted to say, I get that saying it in that way, you know, expletive, 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 may not go the direction you intended. But the thing to think of, the thing to get to is, what is the root of what you want to say? Mm. And how can you deliver that so that it's impactful on the other side and not inflammatory?
Yeah.
And man, when these kids sort that out and have that conversation, the whole parenting kid dynamic changes in that household. I have a couple of quotes that I wanted to bust out for you. Okay. Awesome. So one is by Ken Robinson.
Yeah.
Right? Sir Ken Robinson. He's been knighted. Yes, another label, exactly. He'll be the first one to tell you that it's a ridiculous label. But the fact is that given the challenges we face, education doesn't need to be reformed. It needs to be transformed.
The key to this transformation is not to standardize education, but to personalize it, to build achievement on discovering the individual talents of each child, to put students in an environment where they want to learn and where they can naturally discover their true passions.
Nice. So there's the independence and the empowerment and the relationship. Eh?
And the individual.
Yeah.
Right. Another good one from Maria Montessori. So that was like my schooling quote. This is now the personal, right? Children are human beings to whom respect is due, superior to us by reason of their innocence and of the greater possibilities of their future.
Oh, I feel like you need to repeat that one, sorry.
Yeah, it's you have to remember, she was writing like 1900s,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
And and writing in Italian.
Yeah.
So the translation, right? Okay. So children are human beings to whom respect is due.
Mm-hmm.
Superior to us. By reason of their innocence and of their greater possibilities of their future. Adults are done. Adults are the antiquated model.
Yeah.
Right? However, my global existence currently for myself, right, the mission that I've come to tackle is no social problem is as universal as the oppression of the child. That's the one that rips my heart out.
Yeah. There's a really great Marianne Williamson quote around that, which is, you know, a number one way of saving the world, basically, is changing the way we treat children.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's so many quotes by, you know, highly informed people that I totally agree with, is that education is the way of cultural reform.
Mm.
Like, there is no other mechanism put in place to change what we all say we want changed. It is education.
Mm.
But not the form of education that we've gotten now. That's not education. That's a system.
Yeah, not the system.
Right, but education, the root of the word, right, is to educare, educare, which is caring for the individual deep inside of that, right?
I really love how I came here thinking I was just going to talk about Montessori and find out about your journey.
No.
And then we've kind of dived into the Matrix and enlightenment and relationship. And I mean, these are all things that I feel extremely passionate as well. And I'm just celebrating that I've, you know, like, I don't know if you connect to the word finding your purpose, but that's kind of what I feel like.
Yeah, that's that, you know, find what breaks your heart.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, find what breaks your heart and do that.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.